Hello and welcome to this episode of the Ranting Atheist podcast. Today we'll be listening to the deconversion story of a Nigerian, an ex-Muslim Nigerian. Always good to have them around. And they became what I'll call a secular spiritualist. Yes, it was a term I've never heard before. I know you yourself, you're surprised. So just let's listen. Let's hear his full story. So if you haven't subscribed up Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, and other places you find podcasts, check out the show notes for links you may find useful, especially our Discord server. We'd love to have you there. So now, let's go and listen to the deconversion story of Ife Oluwa. Hello Ife, and you are welcome to the Ranting Atheist podcast. How you doing now?
Just the push arm now.
It's good to have you. Thanks for reaching out. And yeah. Today's episode is a special one because nobody me they run this shit today. In fact, now maybe passenger, or rather now maybe crew. Is it cabin crew for this flight? So. So the cabin crew will keep everything flowing, the recordings, make sure what is said is not lost in case NEPA wants to be unfortunate. So pilot is taking us on a flight today, all the way to Australia. So we have Ore in our midst. The legendary Ore.
Not coming legendary. No raise expectations.
Pressure to you, man. For so, all right, we carry on with this conversation. I will just be tricking my small. So, all right, over to the.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm here and I'm excited to be a co-host and really get into your story, Ife. So, yeah. Are you a millennial, Gen Z? Let me do like how Rant used to run his show.
template. We don't do templates. We start with the base of 80s that I want to. Maybe who knows? Maybe I'm just thinking too much. But it happened.
Okay, so let's know you more. What are the details that are important? Keep your privacy if that's what you want. So yeah. And tell us the Gen Z or millennial thing that's important.
Gen Z, very, very.
What kind of Gen Z? Are we talking like Connor Gen Z? Like, yeah, basically a millennial. Like, you watch the 101 on Nickelodeon.
I'm not.
Gen Z, watch iCarly. Like, we did not see the 101 at all on our screens.
I'm not. Let's just say I'm not turning millennial anytime soon.
Yeah, Ranting, you know
what the fuck is turning millennial? I got me.
You guys were adults when Fino was raining. Flavor, like,
Jesus
please.
Okay. You know, carry on.
What a life.
Jesus.
What a life. Jesus. We have Rema. Can you see the difference?
Okay, we saw Davido when he was a newcomer. Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah, new cat, old cat.
When Davido was still a new cat. Okay.
It was a cub.
Okay,
it was a small
fair
boy.
Enough.
But yeah, if you're a Gen Z, so we can make fun of Ranting together. That was just what I wanted to establish. But yeah, tell us, like, what about you that is important to you?
Yeah, the important details are, I can't reveal, no, my name is Ife, I'm a law student in a certain university. I'm Gen Z and I have very, very controversial views.
Yeah, you're among friends. I have very, very controversial views, even among irreligious people. So, all right. So, I guess let's start at the top. Like, how do you identify as agnostic, atheist, deist? I'm still thinking. Well,
I would rather call it. It's a phrase I came by a few days ago. Actually, before I used to just identify as. Just me. But a few days ago I discovered this phrase, secular spiritualist.
Interesting. Tell me more about that. Like, why does that term resonate with you?
Yeah, it's like, you know, you can observe, right? You can observe spirituality, you can observe religions, you can observe all sorts of canon of philosophies, and you can do so, you know, in while sitting on an observer seat. So when you're an atheist, you sort of have to get into, you sort of have to have issues with religion. But I don't have issues with religion. I feel it's necessary, you know? I just don't like the part where people devote their being to it, and it gets really irritating, and you know, it affects me, because I've had a lot of issues with religion, honestly, a lot of issues. It's been inevitably present in my life up to let's just say up to a few years ago, when I was able to like break away from the entire madness and stuff. So secular spiritualism is like, you know, just picking the good things, picking the good things from religion, from spirituality, and just being an observer. Just watching.
Yeah, I resonate a bit with that, but I would like say that the whole idea of like atheists who are against religion, there's a term for them, they call them anti-theists. So those are people that are against God belief, like strictly. Like Ranting's an anti-theist. But atheism is just you say God exists, I don't accept that claim. Like that's it, right? So yeah, I would say, yeah, I can see why you would say anti-theism is annoying. Like it can like veer into that direction. I personally think it's a kind of necessary evil. I think we can't all be calm. Like Christians are not calm at all. I don't know if you saw the recent Twitter post now where they were beating 100 or so, they arrested 100 or so gay people for some reason. Like they're not calm.
I was just discussing that with a friend a few hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was brutal. It was brutal.
It's brutal.
And definitely. You know, my friend is homophobic. Actually.
Mm-hmm.
So when we usually get to that bridge, and you know we have to cross it, but we always have issues of who's going to throw who off the bridge when we get to that issue, when we get to that particular issue. But we always find a way to make compromises, I guess.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I'm not quite against like more loud anti-religious people, because I feel like, I think I was just talking to Ranting about this, we all can't be calm. Like you can't be calm to people that are giving you hell and giving you fire and don't want you to exist in the world and don't want you to walk around. Like it's, yes, be calm because you don't want to give the whole movement a bad rap. But at the same time, I feel like it's, the idea of being calm and not showing anger is a manipulative tactic from oppressive groups. Like it's you are being oppressed, but the onus is on you to be the bigger person. What now? Let's all slide into hell. Let's go under the bar. Let's be the littlest people. And like, you know, so I find that interesting. So you did mention that a couple years ago you broke free of the cycle. Tell me what's that story? Like what was your belief before you broke up from it, and what led you back to deconstruction?
I was a Muslim, right? So I've discovered that, I don't know if, well, maybe I haven't discovered any, but I don't think Mr. Atheist has addressed or had any conversations with anyone that was previously Muslim. And
I think there's been one. There's been I've spoken with two, but the other one, the person, he kind of told me to cut it off because of there's some information he reviewed for safety. Like this is a core northern atheist that spoke to me, so for safety of his life, I had to scrap the episode. So
I kind of felt reluctant to mention the Islamic part, because the topic of Islam is a very sensitive one in Nigeria. Because especially after what happened with that, I think her name was Deborah or Rebecca woman recently, where she was lynched or something in the north. It was disgusting. It was the more recent one with Davido's music video, and I feel fanatics and extremists are the worst kind of people that anybody could encounter, and I had personal encounters with them because I went to a certain Muslim private secondary school, right? So this school was, well, you know, if this school had teachers that were pacifists, you know, that were Muslims, because there's a beautiful side to the religion. I think there's a beautiful side to every religion. So if these people were pacifists and they weren't as extreme as they were, I don't think I would have personally revolted against the religion. But these guys were hell bent on making sure that you accept that belief. And you know, the belief itself isn't actually what they were postulating. They were postulating what they understand of the belief, right? And it was just horrible. It was just horrible. And thank God, I had the experience. I wouldn't be here if I didn't if I didn't get that experience of how evil, how far away from the actual onus of what God should postulate. I read recently somewhere that I think a James Baldwin book, The Fire Next Time, I read that if a God exists and that God doesn't serve the purpose of love, then such a God isn't supposed to be recognized by humans, because what is the purpose, the necessity of a God is meant to serve for a sort of unity amongst people. So if religion separates people, then what's the point? What's the point? Right. So yeah.
I find that very interesting. Okay, so you have obviously communicated a great disdain for extremism, and I think this contextualizes why you said, atheists who are anti-theists who are very loudly. It's also, I think, for in your perspective, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that would also mirror the same type of extremism that you left Islam for. Is that a correct thing?
Exactly. Extremism of any form, guys or aspects, is dangerous. It's dangerous. Okay. It's very dangerous.
It is, because we human beings, this is something I say, whenever I have the opportunity to talk, we human beings are susceptible to a slew of maybe less than savory characteristics. We are susceptible to groupthink. We are susceptible to tribalistic intent. We, you know, that's something that has aided our survival. We create narratives around those tribes, right? So that's where you see religion, cultures, race, all of those little things, maybe even gender. And just because these are shortcuts our brains have made in order to, bring us to this point where we are the dominant species, if you want to look at it from that angle, doesn't mean that that's all we can be. We can, transcend that, right? So I guess my next question would be, did you kind of struggle with any kind of existential questions or philosophical questions that also spurred you to kind of be an apostate?
Well, essentially, I'd always read books, right? I'd always loved reading books. I had this attraction towards what was beyond, you know. Always beyond Earth. Just look up and see the sky. Does nobody wonder what's beyond the sky? So I'd always read books, and I tell my brother this, that the secrets of life can always be found in books. There will be a point, I think, in human civilization where reading books will become revolutionary action. Because I feel like we're starting to lean towards technology, getting our information from TikTok, YouTube, and stuff. And that's not bad at all. It's process, it's growth. But there is this this sort of melancholic, I think, sentimental touch that comes with reading words of a fellow human, of a fellow person who was taking that time and you know, that sweat to put down these words and use those specific words, because words have power, you see. So I had always read books, and when this thing, the encounter with the extremists, when it happened, and I left that particular space, I went back to books, because during that time I could not read books except the religious book. So I had already gotten enough information on the religious book. I had already read it, because the Quran is written in Arabic, and I will not be revealing this information, but I understand Arabic. I can read it and I understand it. So I understood almost everything, especially. So after leaving that space, I read other books. I started reading on what's his name? Camus. Albert Camus. I don't think it's pronounced Camus. I think it's pronounced Camus.
It's Camus. Yeah, Albert Camus.
Yeah. He's okay. You know him, right? So he's an absurdist.
Yeah, he's one of my more favorite philosophers.
So I read The Stranger, and
I love that.
Mm-hmm. That was the starting point. That was the starting point to a long line of questioning and discovering and going. And like what's his name says, I think Nietzsche, like he says, when you stare down the abyss, there's no coming back. You've looked into it, there's no coming back. You've looked into it and you're done. You can't come back. No matter how much you want to help yourself, because I've tried, because, you know, I reached a point where I was going crazy. Honestly, I did not know how to relate to people. I didn't know how to relate with my mother, who is very, very important to me, because she's a very, very devoted believer. So I didn't know how to address her. You know, I didn't know how to address people generally. And when people talk and they bring up their religious beliefs, and I don't want to insult their intelligence and think they are retarded, but it just irritates. And so that kind of forced me at one point to, okay, I told myself, okay, you know, let me give myself another chance at religion, right? Let me go back. Let me start praying again. And to some extent, it was cathartic, I guess. It was kind of relief. But I had already seen beyond religion, right? So there are always points where you will struggle. You will struggle because you know there is an extent to which what you're doing is meaningless in the grand scheme.
Yeah.
So I get demoralized. I get, you know, I don't, it's really rough. It's really tough. But then, as I said, I'm still growing. I'm still, but I know what I believe, right? I know what I know. I know what
so
I know.
So how do you define, so you said you define yourself as a spiritual, no, as a secular spiritualist, right?
Yeah.
I have three questions. As you were talking, I find a great interest in your story, because in some ways it overlaps with mine, but in many ways it actually deviates. So I wonder, have you ever dealt with questions before this extremist encounter? Was that encounter kind of the spurring moment, or you've dealt with doubts before, or you've kind of, like, some things did not make sense to you and, like, you repressed it? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah. The thing is, I don't think it actually started from the encounter with the extremists, as I would call it. I think it has always been there for me that I would one day discover something I shouldn't discover. When I was younger, I have had a lot of religious troubles, let me call it that. When I was younger, I used to go to an Islamic school, and this teacher would always have this bunch of canes beside him for whoever is late, for whoever doesn't pronounce the Arabic letter properly. And there was this particular day where I knew I was late, right? I knew I was late. I was working with my elder, my older cousin, and we were going to the Islamic school early Saturday morning, and we knew we were late. But he was bolder than I was, so he was used to the beating already. But I was scared, right? I was scared, so I didn't want to go. So I somehow convinced him to let us stay behind somewhere and not go to the school that day, that morning, and we'll just go back home. We'll just go back home when we see people coming back from the school. So when we did see people coming back from school, we went home, but we didn't know the teacher had already called our grandma, because we were staying with our grandma at that time. The teacher had already called her and told her that we didn't come. So when we got home, our grandma made us follow her to the school where the teacher was waiting with a bunch of canes and some other students. And you know, what he did was they just spread us out and just started giving us strokes. And I remember now, I think I can still feel the strokes on my back. It was horrible. So I think I always had problems with religion. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you don't, you can't give what you don't have. So you can only understand things when you reach the stage of understanding. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
are you talking about dealing with hindsight? You can only understand things best in hindsight, like when you look back and you already have the information.
Yeah,
and
all that. Yeah. Just like that. Like you can't understand when you read a book. When you read a book the first time, okay, no, book is a fast stretch. Let me use something else. When you listen to, do you listen to music?
Yes, I do. I'm a huge music fan.
All right, beautiful. So let me use this Davido album as an example. The first time I would listen to it, it was midnight. I was waiting for it. So I listened to it and it just struck me as rubbish, honestly. And I told this girl that I was with, that was beside me at that time, at a particular time, that what he's doing is singing rubbish. He made us wait all this time just to sing this rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
And she insulted me and told me that how would I be so narrow-minded, that why didn't I breathe and sleep with the album? Just wait, listen to it again. So I did just that. I waited a week and then listened to it again the same day, the next week. And I swear, it sounded so different from what I heard the first time. So different. I started hearing new strings, new things.
Yeah, I have definitely experienced what you're saying.
Yeah, so you can't understand a certain thing to a certain extent unless you've reached that stage of understanding. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It does make sense. Do you mind if I ask like another question?
Sure.
Okay. So I think this is an approach Ranting doesn't typically take, but this is an approach I've always took when I ask people about their religious belief or previous religious belief. So I have this idea of things called anchors. I believe that even though, yes, they are core tenets of a religious belief and they are like, yes, you believe it. If you're a Christian, you believe in Jesus and miracles. If you're a Muslim, I don't quite know the jurisdiction. I understand a bit, but it's kind of similar, but not really. So the thing I call anchor is that thing that if it shifts, it shakes your faith. Like that's one thing that if it leaves, it shakes your faith. So for me, I grew up in Christian tradition, I was heavily religious and very, very devout. I actually deconverted during a 3-month fast. So that's when, or 2 months and a half fast, right? And I remember I saw misogyny in the Bible, and that didn't move me. Yes, this contributed to my eventual deconstruction, but it didn't move me. It wasn't like my faith shaker, right? I saw kind of like the way Christians are narcissistic. It didn't move me. I saw colonialism. It didn't move me. But one of the first things that moved me was the idea that I was, for some reason, chosen. Like when I realized that the religion you end up practicing is heavily, heavily influenced, almost like 90% or something, by the religion you were born in. Most people would practice the religion of their parents. That seems very interesting, because the religion of your parents is also based on culture and geography. Like if I were born a couple, you know, I'm Yoruba, if I were born a couple houses away.
Sorry, I'm muted if I think I was hearing echo. So yeah. Just unmute when you are ready to speak, Ife.
Okay. So like what I was saying, like, you know, if I was born a couple houses away, I'm Muslim, like simple, and most of my life I will go through that, right? So that was my anchor. So I wonder, what was your anchor? What was that thing that when the scales removed from your eyes, you knew that, like what you said about nature, like staring into the abyss, you knew that there was no turning back. You knew at that moment that, yeah, this is done for me.
So, I think for me, it was especially during that encounter with the extremists. But during that period, what essentially pushed me was this question that, why do people do what they do, right? Like, why do people do good because of a system of rewards and punishments? Or do people do good because they want to do good? Right, so when I was in this school, I was staying in an hostel, and I would always give things like to my juniors when I have, you know, extra in the hostel, and they would always, you know, they like me, they always come to me, speak to me, and I tell them stories and stuff, all that. So, and I would see them the next day at school being what they were being taught to be by the teachers. And I would think, why do people do what they do? Do they do these things because they don't want to go to hell? Or do they do these things because they really want to? Do those kids really, really, really want to live their lives like this? Do I want to, in 20 years or 15 years, be a teacher at a school telling a child that if he does not recite a certain prayer before he sleeps, he'll go to hell? Do I want to do that? Do I want to convince people that, if they don't live their life in a certain way, there is some burning rage and fire for them at the end of the day? Do I want to live my life like that? So the fundamental question, which is that, why do people do what they do, I think was the anchor for me. Because I feel like a woman should give birth, why doesn't the woman beat her child to death? Is it because she believes she should beat her child to death, she would go to hell? Or is it because she just spent 9 hours trying to force the baby out of her? I think there are too many depths to the human are attempted to be defined by religion. But it just fails. Religion fails.
So I would ask this though, like initially when you were talking, you said something that stood out to me. You said you see the value of religion, right? So to you, what is that value? If you're not saying like, because maybe this is me making an assumption. So a lot of times when people say they see the value of religion, what they're actually talking is spiritual concepts and not the parts that are about organized religion and stuff. Organized religion has certain things intrinsic towards it. It has the devotion aspect. It has, this is where people can get their morality. I call it outsourcing morality. So rather than sit on your own and come to logical conclusions about what is right and wrong, right? Like sit down and actually parse through situation by situation. You outsource that labor to a book, right? And it tells you this is right, this is wrong. And you don't have to do more thinking. And you go ahead with it. So I wonder for you, what the utility of religion is, like in the way you said it, like initially, like at the first time we were talking. And why, let me put it this way. I think after you answer that question, I have a follow-up. So what for you is the utility of religion?
All right, so as I stated earlier, I am a law student, so I have to sort of, even if I don't want to, think in a certain way concerning certain issues. So, the benefits of religion. I think this was said by a philosopher. I think his name was Voltaire. He said, even if God doesn't exist, there is a necessity for its existence. The necessity for me here is, as I said, being a law student and all that, is what they call a method of social control. Social control is basically control of human behavior in relation with others. So a thing like religion is necessary because, and this is not me insulting the human intellect, but it is necessary for certain people or peoples to behave in a certain way, because people are chaotic, right? People are chaotic, and if they're not guided properly, it would, they're like fire. If you don't guide it properly, it would burn and rage and bring things down. And I think religion serves the purpose of guiding that fire. But when that's where my problem with it is, where extremism comes in. So if religion remains secular, if it remains teaching people virtue, good virtue, the virtue that were introduced by, what's his name, Plato, the ones that says, I think kindness, justice, and patience and whatnot, those ones, those good virtues, the ones that weren't modified by moral or whatever sentiments, I think those virtues, if they can be incorporated into a certain religion and they were used as the guiding tool for as a method of social control, I think it will be good for society. But in the large sense, religion will fail to serve its purpose. I believe that, because I think this is from Nietzsche again. He said that in the future, in the very far future, men will no longer see the need for God. Rather, they will worship artists. Why do they worship artists? Because artists invoke. You see, there is this state in, well, I think Christianity, where people speak in tongues. Right, this has always been interesting to me because I don't know how it works. I've never really actually seen it happen, but apparently, from what I heard, they enter into a trance and they start to convey the message of God or whatnot. So when Nietzsche said people worship artists because they invoke, what he meant was the trance, the ability to enter into a different realm entirely, perhaps spiritual or mental, that ability will be postulated by artists and what they give to the society, perhaps being in paintings, perhaps in music, perhaps in them just writing, yeah, perhaps in their writings. I think that is already, because it makes sense, it makes perfect sense to me. If you listen to good music, certain good, actually good music, substantial music, it just takes you to a different world entirely.
Yeah, so, I think I can speak on like what exactly you're talking about, like what you're describing. Give me a second. Like, I want you to finish like your thoughts, but I wanted you to just wanted to like draw your attention to like, I could explain that trance like thing that comes through Christianity, because I was extremely devout and I did experience it.
So the necessity of religion comes from guidance, basically. It is a useful method of social control. It helps people, you know, in rehabilitation and in guidance, essentially. And when you said, the question you asked about the utility, I can't really remember.
Basically, what is the utility of religion? Like, why are you not so much pro eradicating it? That was kind of what I was getting at.
Well, I feel the eradication of religion is imminent, because it's basic. It's evolution. It is imminent. It's like trends. Okay, I don't want to. It's not that simple, but it's like trends. Mm. The trend comes and goes, and religion will come and go, because there was a certain time where there was no religion. There were norms, there were values in the cultures of certain people. So, for the first 100, perhaps maybe 80,000 years we've been existing, there was no proper actual religion. Then perhaps, I think this is from a lecture I listened to on YouTube by this philosopher, I can't remember his name. He said the first 1,000 years, hundreds of thousands of years, the heavens decide not to do anything about the affairs of the earth. Then 4,000 years ago, in some obscure parts of the Middle East, there emerges a lady with a miraculous baby inside her stomach. He says it in a sort of comedic way. I don't know if I'm doing that well right now, but he said in a very funny way, in a way that is satirical to the entire point of religion. He's making fun of religion, that it didn't intervene in the first thousands of years, and then suddenly it gains interest. I think for a person to reach that point of lackadaisical attitude towards religion, you must have stared so deep into the abyss. Honestly.
But let's work that. Like, I find this conversation like very interesting, but like what you said about like trances and stuff like that. When you mention secular spirituality, I think I'd come across a TikToker that talked about secular spirituality. In it, what her position was is that, you know, atheism is not a cohesive like movement, right? And a lot of times, like, why people are religious, why we are so tribalistic, is what we are yearning for is community. And when you leave your religious belief, right, you don't immediately find community. Yeah, you can find them online, but it's not like organized the way, you know, organized religion tends to be. Obviously, it's in the name. And she said, and you know, the songs, the music, the feeling of oneness, like when you're in church, for instance, and you're singing a hymn, I know, like, having lived in Abuja and Lagos, I know that hearing, you know, that Muslim call to prayer was always so interesting to me. Like, if I were Muslim, I could see how it would actually instill reverence. The cadence by which they do that call is so interesting. And I think it's because, above all, even with being a skeptic, because that is how I define myself, I am no Philistine. So I write poetry, I read a lot, like I read a whole lot. I love beautiful words. I love if something evoking emotions in me. I love good movies. I love transcendent music. Like these are things that affect me very deeply. And this bled into my devotion when I was religious, right? Like, I would listen to hymns in church and be moved to actual tears. As I end up, like, you know, now I'm irreligious and somebody will say, you're never a true Christian. I was like, I don't think you could ever tell me that. Like, I'll be moved to tears on my knees, like, crying, like, conversing, communing with God, right? And it didn't help that I don't know if you listen to, like, the episode I did with Ranting, I seemed to have, like, some tap into the beyond natural, right? But not just that. I guess it was the way, like, my emotions were always deeply affected by, like, music is so, it's a very important thing for me. Like, I'm always listening to some form of music, jazz, soul, anything with hearts with it, and books. I love when people weave words in beautiful ways. And I think that's where the trance-like state happens. I feel like we as human beings, there are some of us, right? I won't say this applies to everybody, but there are some of us who need that connection. And that's why when you say, like, you don't think religion will be there and people worship at it, I think not quite. It is hard to worship a man, especially in this day and age. Like, look at the way we treat celebrity, for instance. In the age of celebrity, maybe I could have seen that happening if I was born in, like, the 80s or something. Ranting, no offense. But if I was born in the 80s, like when Michael Jackson, them were in their heyday and all of that, and like celebrity was this huge, massive thing, not like now where social media has debased everybody. Even Beyonce, who seems to be like one of those people in that, like, that esoteric realm of celebrity, even then she's actually so much more accessible. It is hard to say somebody wants to worship that kind of person. Like, we are more in tune with the flaws of celebrities now and artists and like people who occupy that space, right? So it's hard for me to say people worship artists. I think in that lies the attraction of a divine entity who is perfect, who is beyond fault. That is the, like, easiest place you can attribute some sort of worship and in their name or something. So that's just kicking back at that and, like, kind of giving you an insight to that trance-like state that Christians experience.
Well, on your view on the worshiping of celebrities, I never actually said celebrities. I said artists.
I know. Those are the closest to, like, more globalized artists that we'll see. Because if you're talking about
anyone now, anyone with a large following on Instagram is a celebrity at this point. Yeah. They call themselves influencers now. And they are celebrities to themselves and to those who follow them. And the reason I used the word artists is because Nietzsche used artists. And there's a difference between artists and celebrities.
I say celebrity because that's the closest I can get. Like, that's the point I was trying to make. Like, a world where, because we human beings, our psychology wants devotion, wants purpose. Like, that, I think it is in the nature of whatever has survived to this point to be like that. Because anybody that really looked into the sheer nihilistic, unfeeling nature of reality, they did not press on their genes. Whatever is surviving now, whatever species of us that are surviving now, are evolved to find meaning where there is no meaning. So I don't think, like, we could get to that point where people will stop seeking that purpose. And when people are seeking purpose, it's hard to see purpose to a random esoteric artist. So that's why my mind, I should not have used celebrities, but I could have used revered artists, like revered musicians, revered directors, and all of that. Yes, those are the people that I can see, like, garnering such a following that they, it also has a sense of community by being their quote-unquote fan or stan, right? The Beehive for Beyonce's, like, example. So it's not about celebrity. I'm using celebrity in, like, a globalized acknowledgement of great artistry. That's kind of how I'm using that word, celebrity. Like, you're popular. I can find other people who are fans of you. So, yeah, you can, you know, go on from there.
Interesting use of words there. That last thing you did, that was very good. The thing I think you're mistaken here is you don't necessarily have to worship someone. You just have to worship what the someone does.
Do you think that most people would be bored with that? Do you think the appeal?
Okay, to you that wouldn't satisfy the deep reverence and divinity that the human seeks. But I think what Nietzsche, again, these are not my opinions, these were his views. What Nietzsche was trying to do was to kind of postulate the absence of religion. So when you're talking reverence, you're starting to go back to religion. So in a world without religion, you must imagine that there was never religion. Again, these were his views. You must imagine that there was never religion. Now, if there was never religion, what people would get used to would be a sort of secular admiration of people's works. Now, I don't know if you watch football, but if you see what Lionel Messi does with the ball, there's this feeling I get personally of absolute pleasure. It's totally immersive. It's absolutely immersive. I think I'm using too little words to describe it. But it's entirely encapsulating. It swallows me entirely because it is madness, emotion. I don't know how a person is capable of such. So if you don't actually have to worship or revere the person, the individual himself, because if you do that, you're basically falling in love, and what we're going for is not something that is, we're going for something that is beyond ourselves. So to feel something beyond yourself towards a certain work or works of art, I think that is what Nietzsche was postulating, I think so.
I think that's the danger of nihilistic philosophy, that you know, people who are indulging in secular spirituality are trying to avoid. Like, there's a deep purposelessness in the universe. Like, and I won't call it up to purposelessness, but Camus said the best, the absurd. Like, you live to die. You just exist and then you are no more. And basically, most of us, our individual actions would have no bearing on the universe at large, like on the world at large. And then all of us, our individual actions have no bearing on the universe at large. So it just seems, you know, when you're instantiated into this consciousness, like whatever any of us are individually experiencing, you seem like the main character. And the moment you take a step back and see that and ask yourself, am I? Am I? You know, that is where, you know, the existential crisis like comes from. And I think that's where we kind of look towards something outside of ourselves. Like, I know personally, I have experience with this, like, even being a skeptic, being a deep, unrepentant nihilist, right? I have, like, that thing outside of yourself. Those are like goosebump experiences, like you talked about, where you hear a good string of music, right? Where you see somebody extremely talented at what they do. Suddenly, it seems like you are not somebody watching through the screen that is your eyes. You're not just perceiving. It seems like there's something factual, something almost tangible about the experience. I don't know if that makes sense, or I don't know if I'm just being poetic with my words.
That makes perfect sense.
So, like, I feel like I think religion will evolve. Like, you can see this in the trend, at least in the US. Like, the current religious trends in the US, you can kind of notice it. What you see is, even though there are more people living organized religion, the number of people who identify as atheists are not increasing. What you see is an increase in people that identify with none. And you see that none, like, includes people who would say, I'm spiritual, but not religious. So in the United States, you know, this is, this encompasses astrology, Wiccans, pagans, the Satanists. You know, Satanists don't believe in actual Satan, but some of them can do some pagan rituals and like tarot readings, divination, all of those things. So what you're saying is people are living organized religion because of, you know, it's unfair, it's extreme, it's inhumane, it's all of these things. But still, they are not going towards like, oh no, like people are still looking for something. People are still, you know, shuffling cards and like throwing cowries, right? So I think religion will transform, but to say it to be eradicated is so hard for me, especially watching the trends. Like, this is a hopeless generation. Like, you being in Gen Z, you see it, like climate change, the way we've come so far, yet we've not moved at all. We've come so far with homophobia, yet we've not moved at all. We've come so far with feminists, and you just see some shit on Twitter and you're like, damn, we've not moved at all, right? And there's just this deep hopelessness, right? And even we, like, it's in the height of that, you see people trying to latch onto something. You can't latch onto Jesus, but like, you want something, right? I just feel like it's just a matter of time till, you know, somebody feels that hole. I don't know. It's up to you. What do you think? Like,
When you say religion, you think religion is going to evolve. I feel this, maybe perhaps a stink to my brain, because it that is bad. If religion evolves, that is very bad, because people are going to start interpreting religion to their to their own canon of sentiments or personal ideas, and then they will seek to impose it, because there must be imposition of certain, or there must be imposition of every canon of ideas, you feel. So when they do this, now, whether their sentiments are violent, they will garner followers. They will. And when that happens, there will be chaos. So I'm not saying religion is necessarily bad at the moment. Of course, there are very, very awful elements to it. What I am saying is, and again, I will quote from that James Baldwin book again, that if the concept of God has any validity or any use, it can only be to make us larger, to make us freer and more loving. If God cannot do this, then it is time we get rid of him. So there is no evolving. To me, I think there is no evolving. There's just eradication. And that is imminent. Regardless of whatever happens, it will come. It will come at a certain point. I'm not saying it will happen the way Nietzsche described it, but it will come at a certain point.
I guess I think it could come, I guess. I think the spurring thing would be when we see things outside of our human scope. I think now, like the planets we exist on, we reign supreme, right? There are no aliens, nothing. For the most part, like, there's this, even though the whole universe is negating our main character syndrome, there is, I think, good reason for a lot of people to feel like the main characters. Like, this is a universe that there are so many habitable planets, and yet we are, you know, as much as we know, we're the only ones, right, who have attained this meta-consciousness. That's what I like to refer to as metacognition, meta-consciousness. And I guess if we ever discover something that negates that, like signs of life on another planet, meeting another species, like anything, because I think that's where a lot of at least modern religions, like that's where they rely on, right? The idea that a God created this particular bubble for the only living creatures. Do you get what, like, I don't know if that makes sense. I've always found that intriguing because that's the bedrock of it. It's like there's this earth and there's a heaven, and the idea of, like, you know, species who are conscious, well, are not human, would be, I think it will be that thing that it will be that thing that shakes a lot of people. As I find, like, find discussions of quote unquote aliens interesting, like there's a reason why a lot of, like, you know, hardcore Christians and all of that are so quick to demonize space travel, like that, because that's the one thing, that's the one thing that is going to be like, the Bible might not be true. Or even, I think, I'm not sure of the creation stories that are present in the Quran, even though I know enough about Islam to kind of discredit it, I don't know, like, the intimate details of it. So you can tell me what you think about that.
Well, the creation stories in Islam is, let me see if I can remember. It largely says God created Adam from mud, and he asked the angels to bow, and he asked the jinns to bow too. But there was a certain jinn, Iblis, who didn't bow, who took on a pre-decided role of debating with God the plausibility, the reasonableness behind him, a being that had been existing previously, to bow to a being that was created in front of him. This is really amusing. Because
it is, like, I think when you start prodding all these things, the nonsensical nature of it starts to jump out at you.
Exactly.
Especially coupled with what you come to know.
Especially my favorite nonsense is these Ten Commandments, the second commandment, which isn't talked about a lot, where God says he gets jealous. This always amuses me. Why would a God, an omniscient, omnipotent God, be capable of feeling jealousy? What's going on? Who wrote this? This is poorly written. This is poorly written.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely
back to the Islam thing. So Iblis argues with God, then he gets kicked out. He gets kicked out of heaven, and he's sent to earth, apparently. And I'm wondering, if there are so many planets, why is God choosing earth? But let's not go into that. So he sends Iblis to earth, and then he allows Adam to inhabits paradise. And as Adam lives on, God eventually realizes, I think Adam gets lonely, and he creates for him a wife. So he creates for him a wife, and it's the same story as the Christianity one. Don't eat from this tree, they're not aware of their nakedness, blah, blah, blah. It's one of the similarities between the Islamic religion and the Christian religions. One of the several similarities, I might add. So, the bone of contention comes when Awahu, she's called Awahu in Arabic, in Islam, tells Adam or convinces Adam to eat this forbidden fruit. And after eating it, they become aware of their nakedness and they start to look for clothes to cover themselves up. And then God notices this and sends them to Earth again. Again. I don't know why Earth again. So he sends them to Earth again, where Iblis is already inhabiting. And at a certain point, their kids starts marrying their kids, and their kids make more kids, and it just becomes an entire orgy of incest. It just gets messy, and it keeps going on until I think someone in their generation does something he's not supposed to do, and then God just wipes everything out. It's a mess. It's a mess.
It definitely is. Yeah,
it's a mess.
I think that really brings me into understanding of like what your story is like. It's definitely non-linear. I think it's just a combination of ideas that you played around with and, you know, got to that point. So, Ranton, are you ready to come back in?
Okay.
We start to remember.
yes. I'm enjoying the conversation. Like, I'm happy we did this. So I think we're already getting to the end now. So I think Aurea has done a fantastic job. I don't need to ask any more questions because the questions went to places I know I would never think of. So this is the beauty of bringing other minds to bring like that anchor, our anchor part. Means if I remember my anchor, I'm trying to remember my anchor self. I'm going to go and do some reflection. So it's been an awesome conversation. So if do you want us to find you online?
No. All right. Not at
all. fantastic. It's been an awesome conversation.
I would like to get in touch with or however.
Okay, yeah, you can connect.
I'm on Twitter, but I'm not on Twitter. I'm on Twitter for memes and vibes. Well, sometimes I come on here in Clubhouse. Like if you like text me in Clubhouse or something, I would see it. Probably I feel like conversations on this app are less interesting. But yeah, if there's ever a discussion you want me to be there, you want to hear my views, and you have like interesting views and you want someone to bounce off ideas over, I'm always down to hear that. I'm always adjusting my beliefs and trying to fine-tune them to like, you know, the best they can be at every point in time. So yeah, I'm on here and I'm on Twitter.
Nice. This has been awesome. Nepa did not take lights. We give Amen. Glory to Lucifer.
Angel Michael has been on our side.
So let us end this conversation. Mashallah.
Okay.
So if, like thank you for coming officially ahead. Thank you for
officially, coming. Officially, exactly.
Yes, we appreciate you sharing your story like this. It went a different perspective, and so I purposely did not ask any question for shock. Like, we expect to be Islam, expected Christianity. Some different tweets, but this was a breath of a different angle, So
yeah, I think that's the best part about it. This is a different angle than I'm used to hearing like about religion. So yeah, it's more calm. I guess that's why he doesn't like extremists.
Yes,
like
yes.
Like definitely a calmer way of seeing things. Not the violence of Jehovah's Witness. we're living Jehovah's Witness. Anyway.
Thank you. for listening to this episode. Please subscribe up Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, and other places you find podcasts. Check out the show notes for links you may find useful, especially Discord. Feel free to use that link. Let's link up with each other. We do Bible study there. So if you want to come once a week, every Wednesday, we'd like to see you there. Have a great week, and I will catch you on the next one.